Ms. Dave Hendricks here.
Yes, I'm calling.
We could, you know, if he's not here, we could just go right into 3543. Okay. Actually, I'm going to... Oh, Dave. He's here. Okay.
Oh, he's quick.
Okay. Yeah, you're quick, because we were going to just open up another work session. Okay, Senate Bill 838. We have lots of amendments.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, Dave Hendricks from the City Council's office. I was out in the hall and running to grab some sets because I wasn't sure which ones you were going to be looking at.
Okay.
Were you looking at starting with, I'll need to have, I have copies of the one I know that the chair had requested, but I'm not sure
I think we're going to start with Representative Burley's amendments.
Okay, does, if I can get a set of those, I could be right back, or if someone has the sets handy.
There's a lot of paper up here. Okay.
Here we go. Okay, I take it you'd like to have a brief description of what these do. I'll start with the A19s. The bill, as you know, imposes certain standards on electric utilities for purposes of reductions in or use of renewable energy. And the bill makes a distinction, draws a line between what's a large utility and what's a small utility as far as whether or not they're going to be standard, subject to the principal standard, which is set out in Section 6 of the Act. So that the line that's drawn in the bill as it currently stands is between a utility that sells more than 1.5% of all electricity in this state versus those who sell less than that amount. So that's the dividing line. Do you sell more? Do you sell less than 1.5% of the total sales? And obviously, if you move that line up and down, you're going to bring in certain smaller utilities and make them subject to the standard and say that you as well will have to meet these percentages in the given years for how many much of the electricity you're selling is coming from renewable sources. The A19 would simply move that line to 3%. So in essence, what it would mean is that more of those smaller utilities would not be subject to the standard that's laid out in Section 6. They would still be subject to the requirement that appears in Section 7 sub 2, which says that beginning in the calendar year 2025, at least 5% of the electricity sold to retail electricity consumers must be qualifying electricity, that is electricity from renewable resources. That's the standard that we have now for those under 1.5%. If we move it up to 3%, they would no longer be subject to the Section 6 standard, but they would then shift under there and say, well, however, by the year 2025, at least 5% you sell has to be qualifying.
Yeah. Want to just go through all of these? Okay. We've got a lot to go through, so I'm going to ask you to...
Speed it up. 827. The bill has a general rule that usually only facilities that are put into production after 1995 are going to qualify for being renewable energy. This particular amendment would make an exemption from that for generating facilities that use biomass if they meet the what's called PURPLA, the Public Utilities Regulatory Policy Act requirements as being for a qualified facility. So a limited exemption from the requirement of when the facility was placed into operation and only for certain biomass ones. I believe it's primarily generating facilities that are using forest products to generate electricity left over from mill production and things like that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Burley.
The reason I had this amendment drafted is for that very reason that there are some what I would consider to be pioneers, really, that developed biomass cogen facilities subsequent to the PURPA Act being enacted in 1978. And these facilities are PURPA certified, which means they're under 10 megawatts in size. And I think that it would only be fair to recognize the fact that they've been doing this and should get the same fair credit for being renewable energy producers as others.
Thank you.
The Dash 830 amendments, very simply, on page 9 of the bill, there are certain provisions relating to cost recovery by electric companies. There's only two really principal ones of those, PGE and PacifiCorp. And so these are the investor-owned utilities. And subsection 3 of section 13 right now allows it actually directs the Public Utility Commission to establish an automatic adjustment clause for, in essence, increasing rates to reflect costs of the acquisition of renewables resources necessary to meet the standard. The Dash 830 amendments would delete that entire subsection, eliminate the automatic adjustment clause.
I'll comment on that, Madam Chair.
Representative Burley.
Thank you. Colleagues, you've heard during the testimony before, and I'm sure we'll have much more discussion on this today because there are several amendments that deal with this aspect. In my opinion, this is the biggest issue I have with this bill as it's currently configured, because I don't think that the automatic adjustment clause adequately looks out for the consumer's best interest, that is, the ratepayers. As Mr. Hendricks pointed out, this amendment would delete the provisions for the automatic adjustment clause from this bill, but it would not delete the automatic adjustment clause that currently exists in the Oregon Revised Statutes, which is a very important point to make. This bill does more with this automatic adjustment clause than what's already provided for in statute, and I don't think that it provides the consumer benefits, so that's, or protections. That's why I frankly think it should just be struck out of the bill completely.
The Dash 838 amendments makes a little tweak on page 14 of the bill, which relates to what's referred to as community-based renewable energy projects. That section sets a goal, essentially, for year 2025, that at least 8% of Oregon's retail electrical load come from small-scale renewable energy projects, and that's kind of, that's defined as less than 20 megawatts. So there's a goal here. This amendment would simply say, instead of 8% of that load coming from these small-scale projects, that 2% would.
Question, Madam Chair?
Representative Cannon.
Is that goal a binding goal for those community-scale projects?
Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Cannon, no. It's just a goal.
Follow-up, Madam Chair?
Follow-up.
So this would reduce, the intent of this amendment is to reduce the goal for community-scale projects.
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Cannon, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
The Dash A39 amendments is a little technical fix. They're on page 4 of the bill. We have up at the top, we're describing what type of sources are valid renewable sources for the purposes of being electricity to meet the standard. And we have in subsection 5, starting at line 5, an exemption for an electric utility from certain low-impact hydroelectric facilities. The problem that was spotted was that sub 4 indicates that electricity generated by a hydroelectric facility may only be used if it's located in certain places, primarily outside of places where salmon streams, et cetera, are located. And consequently, the intent with sub 5, as I understand it, was to say that these particular type of certified low-impact hydroelectric facilities should be used even if they are within those areas. So by adding the sentence that appears in the 839, you would exempt these facilities from the location requirements that appear currently in subsection 4.
So, Chair Manager, quickly, do you have the Dash 44 amendments with you?
I believe I do.
My follow-up.
Exactly the same amendments.
Thank you very much.
Item 44.
Okay.
The Dash 41 amendments takes a slightly different approach to the automatic adjustment clause that we already discussed. In essence, it would not delete the requirement of the current requirement in the bill of an automatic adjustment clause, but requires both in essence, a contested case proceeding, a full evidentiary hearing before the commission before they establish an automatic adjustment clause, and will also require a full proceeding, contested case proceeding, whenever there is a change in the rates under that clause. The clause, as I understand how it works, and is that the automatic adjustment clause does not mean you automatically necessarily get a change in the rates. There's usually a proceeding anyway. This would require a full evidentiary hearing before the change in the rates occur, with opportunity also for cross-examination and discovery and all those other good things. The Dash A49 amendments, once again, starts out with the change from the standard of who's a large utility and subject to the principal standard from 1.5% to 3% of the sales of electricity in this state. In addition, it produces a slightly different standard for electric utilities that sell less than 3% of the 3% of the electricity, and you can go through there and see the standards, 5% in calendar year 2025, and the difference here is between those who sell between 0% and 1.5% and those that sell 1.5% and 3%. And it establishes the 5% is what we saw in the bill before for those small utilities. This would impose a 10% requirement on those that are between that 1.5% and 3% percentage mark. So, in essence, it establishes a requirement for those slightly larger, but not to the point where they're selling less than 1.5%. They're going to have a slightly higher requirement by 2025. Now, I'm getting up to the point where I'm getting to the ones where I didn't have time to bring them through, so I'm going to have to look at them a little bit myself. The A54 amendments, once again, are addressing the automatic adjustment clause provision. It imposes some procedural requirements looking at the amendment from 12 to 18, where you have to have a filing for approval of a proposed rate change to recover the costs under the automatic request, and also still has some language there relating to an opportunity for persons to appear and do an evidentiary type hearing on the rate change.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kinnock.
Do we have Dash 63 amendments? My understanding is that this is very similar to Dash 63's, but I don't see at the dais. Maybe they'll come later.
I actually have them, so I don't know if we...
We can hang. We can wait and just come back to that issue. But.
Yep.
The Dash 63's are very similar. They have only a couple of very small changes from what you see in the Dash A54's. The A58 amendments tinkers again with the type of renewable source that can qualify for electricity that will meet the resource. The bill currently has language on page 3 that describes certain biomass as being wood material from forest or rangeland, woody debris, etc. This definition, 526-277, comes from a bill that was passed last session and now appears in the ORS. It's slightly different than what is laid out in C, but it would make it consistent with the provisions of that other law.
Actually, Madam Chair, if I may. Dave, I think this A58, we still don't quite have this one right because we need to refer to 526-277, and then there's a subsection in there that actually deals with the woody biomass.
I don't think, Chair Dingfelder, Vice Chair Representative Burley, we don't need the reference to the subsection when we say woody debris as defined in that section. It's the only woody debris that's defined in there.
Perfect. Thank you.
Woody biomass, I should say. Then the A59 amendments, looking at those quickly, this would impose, in addition to the current cost cap that's in the bill, the cost cap is basically looking at how much is this going to cost you based on the revenue requirements as utility to implement this, and puts a cap on how much you have to spend in any given year. The dash 859 takes it one step further and says, yeah, there's not only a cost cap, but there's also a going to be a rate cap of 2% in any 12-month period. So not only is there, would there be a cap for the cost, there would also be a cap on how much the rates to the consumers could go up by reason of acquiring renewable energy to meet the standard. Oh, then the dash 860 amendments would, in lieu of a rate cap, or it keeps the cost cap, but it also adds another qualification to what the PUC can do with respect to these investor-owned utilities as far as changes to rates of the utility. And instead of using a rate cap, it uses a requirement that the commission finds that compliance does not have a material adverse impact on the electricity consumers of an electric utility. And it allows a basically a petition by consumer groups or consumers to come in and say, this will have a material adverse impact. And if the commission determines that that will occur, they can relieve the utility and hold part of the obligation to comply with the renewable portfolio standard.
Thank you. Okay.
And would you like me to go through?
Why don't you go through the other set of amendments, and then I'm actually going to have the PUC come up as well. So
okay.
Start with the I have the 843s.
843. The bill currently allows the use of, for renewable source, they allow the use of biogas. There had been some concern about whether or not the biogas phrase here would be adequate to cover landfill gas, which is, of course, one of those gases that are being used a lot now to generate electricity. This would make eliminate any question whatsoever about the use of landfill gas for purposes of generating, for purposes of meeting the standard, I should say. The A44s, as we mentioned, is a duplicated one we discussed earlier, making sure that those specific hydroelectric facilities referred to are not subject to the geographical location requirements imposed for most hydroelectric facilities. The dash A46 is going to take us into the public purpose charge. The public purpose charge, as you know, is a percentage amount that's added to the bills of the consumers of the customers of investor-owned utilities, electric companies. The law currently indicates that there can be a change in that rate. Let me see if I can get down to line 27. Says that the commission can establish a different public purpose charge for an individual retail electric consumer, any class of retail consumers located within the service area with an exemption for certain large ones. What the dash A46 will do is prohibit them from doing any public purpose charge other than the 3% charge that's currently provided for in statute. Okay, that's the A46 and the A48. The bill as it currently stands makes quite a few changes to the public utility district statute, and there was requests to come back in and do some tweaks on that, but let me make sure I'm looking at the right thing here. Hold on. Page 6, 25. Oh, a couple of things it does here. On page 6 of the bill, we have certain exemptions from compliance with the renewable portfolio standard, and one of them, appearing in section 8 sub 2, is there are certain generating facilities on the Mid-Columbia River, and it basically allows to say for the consumers, and these are basically consumer-owned utilities who use generation capacity from those plants, is that they do not have to use renewable qualifying electricity to the extent that would force them to substitute out that low cost, because this is low cost power that they're getting from these plants. However, at lines 25 through 27, there was a limitation. 24 through 27, there was a limitation that it was only going to be what's called firm power. And I won't go into all the details of exactly what firm power is, but in essence, it's the base stuff in the contract that says we'll guarantee you'll get at least this much to meet your needs at any time of the year, any time, no matter what the water conditions are. Beyond that, there's other power they may acquire under the contracts, but it was limited just to that firm power. This particular amendment would eliminate that requirement and allow them to say that they don't have to substitute for any of the power that they get from those particular generating plants on the Mid-Columbia. And again, primarily consumer-owned utilities that we're talking about on that.
Dave?
Yes.
There is also, isn't the second part about that amendment also address the voluntary green power program?
It does. It what had happened was, if you look on page 14, we have a provision, and it starts actually on 13, where we have what's called the mandatory green power rate. And what that does is impose a requirement on utilities generally to provide what's called a green power rate, in essence something where the consumer voluntarily agrees to pay a little more with the idea that the money will go towards acquiring renewable energy. The issue that the draft that we had worried about when we were drafting the bill was that there currently is a requirement of a green power rate for the investor-owned utilities, PGE and PacifiCorp. And so we had I had drafted in a couple of different ways, and we ended up on page 14 at length 13 and 14 to simply say that the green power requirements of Section 23 of the Act do not apply to electric companies that are subject to the other green power rate requirement. The problem was is that at lines 10 through 12, it had also said that qualifying electricity to provide electricity under a green power rate cannot be used to comply with the requirements of the renewable portfolio standards. Well, that's true for purposes of PGE and PacifiCorp, as well as all the rest of the utilities. And when we said that the provisions sections don't apply to those folks, we exempted out more than we wanted to exempt out. So the amendments at lines 4 through 7 basically, or 4 through 5 basically, it makes it clear that, no, we're only exempting you out from this particular green power requirement. You're still underneath your existing green rate requirement, but you are not going to be able to use the power you buy with that extra money that consumers are already paying involuntarily to say to comply with the standard that we're establishing here. It's a little complicated. And then finally, these amendments down in line 35 does some adjustment on the ability of a public utility district to become a member of an electric cooperative or a limited liability company for the purposes of basically engaging in generating electricity. There was some concern about the scope of that language in the bill. There's always issues about competitiveness back and forth between investor-owned and consumer-owned. This language here limits somewhat what was in the original bill as far as what they could do within those, what they could do with, once they entered into those types of organizations. And the final sentence says they cannot exercise the power of condemnation for the benefit of the cooperative or the limited liability company. Thus, you know, because a limited liability company could be a private entity that they become a member of, and what that sentence does says we don't want to be able to use the condemnation for the benefit of a private entity. Page 23. This is also part of the public People's Utility District language. And what we're looking at, but hold on.
This is the dash A53s, correct?
Yeah, we're looking at the A53s, which amends language is on page 23 of the bill. And this had to do with whether or not a People's Utility District had to go back to the voters to do certain things. As drafted, the language had some suggested that they could perhaps go do a public contract without the approval of the voters for acquisition of any electrical capacity, not just renewable energy capacity. And there was concern that that was simply too broad, that they didn't want to change that statute that much. They wanted to limit it to the renewable energy component. So the dash A53 amendments limits this it down to renewable energy certificates, construction, et cetera, of a renewable energy facility, or the acquisition or financing and capacity needed to shape, firm, or integrate electricity from renewable energy. So it limits that down tightly to contracts entered into for renewable energy, essentially. And then finally, the A63, which I think I saw getting handed out there, is a slight variation on the earlier amendment we discussed, which would, in essence, require a evidentiary hearing whenever there was the adoption of an automatic adjustment clause, and they are still required to establish one. So the language still indicates that the PUC shall establish an automatic adjustment clause. And but then when there is a proposed rate change to recover costs under the terms of an automatic adjustment clause, once again, you have to have a evidentiary hearing. We also corrected a reference in Section 13A. It used to refer to costs as required under Section 13 sub 1. That was an incorrect reference, and it's been corrected to Section 13.3 as far as which costs are being recovered underneath the automatic adjustment clause. And again, this language is limited to the investor-owned utilities.
Thank you, Dave. I know how you got all these amendments done in such a short amount of time, but you're amazing. I'd also like to call Lee Sparling up if you want to stay up here, Dave, just in case there's questions. Lee, I would like to have you come up and talk about the dash 46 and the dash 63s, if you can. The dash 46 is in regards to the public purposes charge, if you can just comment on that. And then the dash 63s is the new amendment on the automatic adjustment clause.
Chair Dinkfelder, members of the committee, my name is Lee Sparling. I'm director of the utility program at the Public Utility Commission. First of all, with respect to A46, as Mr. Hendricks just described, it changes the language in the statutes regarding the public purpose charge to make it clear that the commission cannot adjust the level of the charge for any customer class or individual customer. There has been some uncertainty as to whether the commission had that authority with respect to the residential and commercial customers, or whether the commission was constrained so that overall the public purpose charge would only be limited to 3%. This makes it clear that the commission, under that statute, can't change the public purpose charge for anybody, to change it to anything other than 3%. The commission is okay with that in view of the fact that there is other language in the statute, in SB 838, in Section 46, which is on page 28 of the Annie Gross Bill, that does provide some authority for the commission to authorize a change in rates to fund conservation, cost-effective conservation for residential and commercial customers. That provision also still includes a limitation on the industrial customers, that is the large customers over one average megawatt. The combination of what might be charged here and in the public purpose charge can't be more than 3%. So, in effect, the industrial customers would not pay more than the 3% public purpose charge.
Thank you for that. And then also A63, since we have multiple amendments on the automatic adjustment clause, I just want to make sure if there's any questions, maybe you can discuss what the word changes here does, and then we'll see if there's any questions before we take motions.
Chair Dinkfelder, with respect to the A63 amendments, The purpose of the changes in the language here relative to the A and Gross version of 838, the purpose was to add more explicit language about the opportunity for parties to request and have access to certain procedures at both the stage where the automatic adjustment clause is established and later on at the stage where a utility requests a rate change under the terms of the automatic adjustment clause. And as the language of the amendment indicates, parties will have an opportunity for a hearing. They'll be able to conduct discovery, submit evidence, have cross-examination, all the usual procedures that we have in rate case processes at the PUC. The only difference here is that, again, we're talking about an automatic adjustment clause, which means we'd be focusing on the costs that are outlined in the other provisions of Senate Bill 838 regarding the cost of renewable resources and associated transmission. These proceedings would not go into other costs that the utility incurs for, say, backup resources for these renewable resources, nor would this proceeding get into the company's other costs for pensions and benefits, for and all its cost of capital or any other category of costs. It will be limited to what's specified in the bill for consideration under the automatic adjustment clause.
Okay. Are there any questions before we take motions?
Yes.
Representative Sparling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Sparling, I want to get into this automatic adjustment clause in greater detail. I have excerpts of your testimony from March 27th before the Senate Environment and Natural Resources Committee, where you said that regarding the automatic adjustment clause, it's automatic only in the sense that the commission does not need to have a hearing to establish these rates. And furthermore, the commission can simply focus on the cost of the renewable resources at issue here, which is consistent with what you just said. She went on and said, as opposed to having to have a general rate case at which it looks at all of the costs associated with it. And I would submit that it's not just the cost, but it's the savings also when you have a general rate case, that they're looking at costs and savings and everything in establishing the rate. So I still don't understand why we need this automatic adjustment clause. Why aren't we just going through the general rate case where they establish whether or not the rates are fair, just, and reasonable? The problem that I'm having with 63 and 54, whatever is out there now, is that it doesn't have those consumer protection measures. Again, the fair, just, and reasonable, it's in 757210 when you have a general rate case. Could you explain?
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Burley. The Commission's view is that even with these provisions for certain costs to be eligible for recovery under the Automatic Adjustment Clause, that in no way is going to prevent utilities from filing general rate cases, because there is a variety of other costs that the companies are still going to need to file general rate cases in order to recover. I mentioned a moment ago that to the extent the utilities need any backup resources, such as new gas-fired resources, to work with the renewables, because renewables may not always provide the power when you need it. To the extent that companies incur any costs for those, they're going to have to file a general rate case for it. They're also going to have to file general rate cases for increases in all their other costs. So the Commission doesn't believe that with this automatic adjustment clause mechanism for these renewable resource costs, that the companies are, for some reason, not going to be filing general rate cases.
Any other questions? Okay, we will take a motion, and thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate coming here and explaining all these. Any motions?
Sure. Madam Chair, I would like to move that we adopt the A30 amendment.
Okay, Representative Burley has made a motion to adopt the A30 amendments, and we will take roll calls on all of these amendments since we have so many of them. Sorry, Ian. Will the clerk call the roll?
Representative Smith. No discussion.
Do you want to have a discussion?
Sure.
Okay.
Colleagues, the 830, as Mr. Hendricks explained to us, does something that's really very simple, and it goes into Section 13, deletes lines 24 through 38, gets rid of the automatic adjustment clause completely. As I pointed out earlier, it's still in statute. If you look at 757210, it says that they can still have them, of course, without prior hearing, which is the big issue that we've got here. We've spent a lot of time working with the utilities and others trying to figure out how to give the consumer protection measures that I feel we need to have for the ratepayers. We don't have any language that I'm comfortable with, and I think the easiest way to deal with this is just get this adjustment clause out, let them go through the general rate case process that's already established, where they've got full evidentiary hearings and discovery and the whole works.
Okay. Any other discussion? Representative Gannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess, you know, I will oppose this motion. I'm confident that the clause in the automatic adjustment clause, the poorly named automatic adjustment clause, that confines these rate adjustments to prudently incurred costs assures me that there will be a reasonable and public process for determining what qualifies under this section of the bill. So I guess I'm not convinced that there's a problem with including this in, and I'll be opposing the motion for that reason.
Okay. Any other comments?
Madam Chair, I concur with Representative Cannon just expressed. I think this is an established procedure that is already in the law. I have reiterating it here in the bill just makes it clear that this is available, that it has sufficient procedural protections, that I think it should go forward as part of this package.
Any other comments, questions? We seem to be. Do you want to see if Representative Jensen's outside? Or we take a roll call.
I've got another one I'd like to do.
Do you want to do the 39 since people sent us a 34? Okay, the clerk will call the roll, and we're voting on the dash 30s.
Representative
Smith?
Aye.
Representative Fire?
No.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative
Burley?
Yes.
Representative Cannon?
No.
Representative McPherson?
No.
Chair
Dinkle? No.
The motion fails.
Madam Chair?
Representative Burley?
I move the 841 amendment to Senate Bill 838A.
Okay, Representative Burley moves the dash 41 to Senate Bill 838. Is there any discussion?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Representative Burley.
Thank you. Colleagues, given the fact that the 830 amendment didn't pass, which would have gotten rid of the automatic adjustment clause completely, the 841 amendment adds language that I believe makes it far more clear about what's going to happen under the automatic adjustment clause. And I kind of look at this, I was thinking about this over the weekend, and I had an eye doctor's appointment the other week, and you know how they have the test, what looks better, number one or number two? And I kind of look at this, if you'll pull up the A63 amendment and the A41 amendment, I ask you to kind of compare these two, where the, in lines 15, 16, 17 of 63, they talk about, upon the request, the commission shall conduct a hearing, et cetera, et cetera. If you look at lines 6 through 11 of the A41 amendment, I believe it's far, far, far more clear that the commission shall provide parties to the proceeding opportunity to develop an evidentiary record, shall assure that the parties have full procedural rights in the proceeding, including but not limited to the right to conduct discovery, introduce evidence into the record, conduct cross-examinations, and submit written briefs and oral arguments. That, colleagues, in my opinion, is very clear. It gives the ratepayers and the consumers the protections that they need, the certainty that they'll have under the automatic adjustment clause that they'll be able to do these things and not just have language that says the commission shall conduct a hearing. So, therefore, I'm moving the A41 amendments be adopted.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Just a comment, and I really appreciate where Representative Burley is coming from, both with this amendment and the others that he's proposed, which I really believe are, I mean, you're looking out for the interests of the ratepayers, and I think that ought to be the concern, one of the primary concerns of all of us up here. I guess, you know, ultimately, my consideration has in part to do with what I hear from ratepayer advocates, including and in particular, the consumers who are the constituents of my district and the residential ratepayers. And so, you know, given their familiarity, their participation in these adjustment clause cases, and their assurances that this doesn't have any negative impact on consumers, I'm comfortable with something very close to the automatic adjustment clause that we have in statute now, which I think is best expressed in the dash 63s when and if we get to them. So I guess that's where I'm going with that.
Did you bring your sleeping bag, Representative Cannon, at this rate? So any other comments on the dash 41s? Okay, clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
No.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative
Burley?
Aye.
Representative Cannon?
No.
Representative
Kirkland?
No.
Attorney
Incoming?
No. And the motion fails. Any other motions?
Sure.
I move we adopt.
Telling you to say that.
We adopt the 859 amendment, the rate cap.
Hey. Representative Burley has moved adoption of the dash A59, Senate Bill 838. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
No.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
Aye.
Representative Cannon?
No.
Representative McPherson?
No.
Chair Dean
Phillips? No. The motion fails, and so the dash 859s are not adopted.
And the chair?
Representative Burley?
I move that we adopt the A60.
Representative Burley moves adoption of the A60 amendments to Senate Bill 838. Is there any discussion?
Yes, Madam Chair.
And Burley.
Colleagues, this I refer to this as the material adverse impact amendment, and you know, in my estimation, this would provide a true off ramp where if the costs of complying with the renewable portfolio standard are indeed excessive, however that's measured, it would give the ratepayers the opportunity to actually petition or request that the PUC go into a hearing and actually assess whether or not there's a material adverse impact. I think that you know, this doesn't change the automatic adjustment clause. It just adds a little bit more consumer protection opportunity and an off-ramp if these costs are indeed going up.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Okay. All right. So the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Smith?
Yes.
Representative Byer?
No.
Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Representative Burley?
Aye.
Representative Cannon?
Nope.
Representative McPherson?
No.
Attorney Phillips?
No. The motion fails. The 60s are not adopted.
Chair?
Representative Burley?
I move that we adopt the A-19 amendment.
Okay. Representative Burley has moved adoption of the A-19 amendment. Any discussion?
Yes.
Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colleagues, this will get rid this will raise the threshold from 1.5% to 3%, which will exempt virtually all of the consumer-owned, certainly the co-ops, I believe all of the people's utility districts. I think the only one that would be left in would be EWEB, Eugene, Water and Electric. And just to give you an idea why I feel this is very important, I mean, you know, my co-op, Central Electric, is at 1.48 or something like that. I'm not sure how close they are, but at some point they may jump over the line. But, you know, I've got an interesting little statistic here, and Representative Greg Smith, I'm sure, can appreciate this, and Representative Jensen. The Umatilla Electric Co-op has 1,038 irrigators in it. And these people need electricity to run their pumps, to irrigate their fields, and produce their agricultural crops. And the irrigators in Umatilla Electric represent 28.8% of the total load. So, you know, any cost increases are going to get passed directly on to people that are already operating on very, very narrow margins. And I think that when you've got these co-ops, that their business model is to provide power at least cost versus the investor-owned utilities whose business model is to set rates so that they can make a profit. I think it's incumbent on us to get the co-ops out, get the people's utility districts out. So that's what A19 would do, and I certainly would hope you agree with me on this one.
Any discussion? Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Unfortunately, I've been opposed to this motion. The adoption of a renewable portfolio standard has great benefits over the long term for the entire state of Oregon. And that's true of rural Oregon as well as urban Oregon. This bill already has an exemption for significant portions of the state at the 1.5% level. By raising that threshold to 3%, it would, in effect, take large portions of the state out of the shared responsibility for meeting that portfolio standard. It's not at all clear that this will have additional cost impacts on consumers across the state, very likely not. But to the extent that it does, it seems quite unfair that those burdens would fall disproportionately on a portion of Oregon, and it wouldn't be a shared responsibility for the entire state. So I can't support an amendment that would expand the exemption of large portions of the state from meeting this, what I think is a shared responsibility.
Thank you. Any other comments? Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just respectfully, I fail to see the logic in the good representative's argument. If that logic is to be pursued, then why exempt anyone? There are perfectly valid reasons that have been offered to this group, this committee, in relationship to the nature of what the A19 amendments are at. And I would ask the committee to seriously consider those and to adopt the A19.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. Any other comments? Okay. All right, clerk will call the roll.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Byers.
No.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Representative Burley.
Aye.
Representative Cannon.
No.
Representative McPherson.
No.
Chair Dinko.
No. The motion fails. A19 are not adopted. Other motions? Representative Burley? Do you want to move the...
Madam Chair, I...
Would you like to move the A39?
Actually, you know, Madam Chair, I kind of look at this as I've got issues above the line and issues below the line, and I've exhausted all of my issues above the line and didn't get any of them. So, though some of these other amendments I'll be happy to support, at this point in time I'll be a no vote on this bill when it does come, well, here in committee and on the floor as well.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your hard work on this.
Sure.
Appreciate it. Okay, I'll take motions on other amendments. Representative Cannon.
Madam Chair, I move the -43 amendments.
Okay, Representative Cannon has moved the -43 amendments, Senate Bill 838. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, just to point out, as we heard earlier, this will clarify that landfill gas projects are renewable energy products. I think that that was the original intent. This is a quick clarification of that.
Okay. Any other discussion? Okay, the clerk will call the roll, please. The -43s.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Byers?
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Representative Burley.
Aye.
Representative
Cannon.
Aye.
Representative McPherson.
Aye.
Aye. The motion carries. The -43s are adopted. Take another motion.
Madam Chair, I move the -44 amendments.
Okay. Representative Cannon moves the -44 amendments. Is there any discussion? And I do believe these are the same as the -39 amendments that Representative Burley just mentioned. Hydroelectric facility. Any questions, discussion?
I don't know if Representative Burley, if you'd take a moment and walk through what this amendment does. I know it's not your amendment, but if you could walk through it.
Well, we have the same amendment, so.
Well, I'd
be happy to if you'd like, Madam Chair.
Sure.
As Mr. Hendricks pointed out, and when I first read this, I had to do my reality check with Mr. Hendricks and some other people, but
the way, you know, the bill excludes hydro. If you look at the bottom of page 3, section 4, subsection 4, hydro is excluded if it's inside what's referred to as the protected areas under the Pacific Northwest Electric Power and Conservation Planning Council. It's also excluded. They don't count if they're within wild and scenic rivers, both federal or state. And I got a map of these protected areas, and you know, the whole Columbia Snake Basin is part of the protected area, including the Deschutes. And I've got folks that want to do these things on the Deschutes and irrigation canals. So I read this several times to make sure that, you know, because of the wild and scenic and the protected areas, and the way that subsection 5 is worded, it doesn't specifically exclude it from that geographic prohibition. So, you know, just to be clear, by adding this amendment, it just says that section 5 is, you know, not subject to that spatial prohibition, if you will, that geographic prohibition.
Does that clarify? Okay, any other questions or discussion on this? Okay, there's a motion on the table to adopt the A44s. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Smith. Aye. Representative Bice. Aye. Representative Jensen. Aye. Representative
Burley. Aye.
Representative Cannon.
Aye. Representative McPherson.
Aye.
Chair Dinko.
Aye. Dash
44s
are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move the -46 amendments.
Okay, Representative Cannon has moved the -46 amendments to Senate Bill 838. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, this is, again, as we heard from Mr. Sparling and Mr. Hendricks, this would prevent the PUC from being able to raise that 3% public purpose charge for residential and commercial customers of investor-owned utilities.
Thank you. Representative Cannon, any questions about that? Okay. I think there's only two of us that were here when Senate Bill 1149 was actually in the House. Is that correct, Representative Jensen?
I think so.
No. House committee or in the House?
Oh. On the committee, you were here for Senate Bill 1149, too, so three of us were here. So that is in reference to the public purposes charge from Senate Bill 1149. Okay, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Smith.
Yes.
Representative Byron.
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Representative Burley.
Aye.
Representative Cannon.
Aye.
Representative McPherson.
Aye.
Chair Dinko.
Aye. Motion carries, and the dash A46 are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 48 amendments.
Okay, Representative Cannon moves the dash A48 amendments to Senate Bill 838. Is there any discussion?
This is, Madam Chair, a group of technical amendments, set of technical amendments that, well, I guess there's some risk at calling them technical amendments, but that's how I understand them, and be happy to try to answer any questions.
Okay. Mr. Hendricks walked us through those. Are there any questions about this amendment? Okay. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Smith.
Aye.
Representative Byers.
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
Aye.
Representative Burley.
Aye.
Representative Cannon.
Aye.
Representative McPherson.
Aye.
Chair
Dinko. Aye. Motion carries, and the dash A48 are adopted.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 53 amendments.
Representative Cannon moves the dash 53 amendments. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, could you walk through once again what the dash for A53 amendments down.
Sure. And actually, I'm going to ask Mr. Hendricks to come back up in case there's any questions. This is the one about clarification of the PUDs to have the customer vote. Is that correct?
Correct. Whether or not they are required to have a customer vote before entering into certain contracts. Generally, for certain large acquisitions, as I understand it, they need to have a vote of their members, of the people within the district, rather, to whether or not they want to authorize that acquisition. This would exempt basically most of the acquisition of renewable resource energy as well as renewable energy certificates from that vote requirement.
So this narrows what's in existing, what's currently in 838. Is that correct? That's the way I read it.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, Chair Dingfelder.
Yeah, it sort of narrows the scope of what's in the existing Senate Bill 838.
Exactly. The existing language in the language would suggest that basically any acquisition of electrical capacity, in which case the section would be kind of moot because that's what PUDs do. And so it would kind of eliminate the requirement. This would narrow it down just to things related to renewable energy acquisition.
Any other questions? All right, thank you. Dave. Clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Byer. Aye. Representative Jensen. Aye. Representative Furley. No. Representative Cannon. Aye. Representative McPherson. Aye. Motion passes and the dash A53 is adopted. Madam Chair, I move the dash 63 amendments.
Okay, Representative Cannon moves the dash 63 amendments to Senate Bill 838.
Madam Chair, if I could comment, I think my belief is that this amendment addresses many of the concerns that we've heard about the automatic adjustment clause, that it guarantees that customers will always have hearing and discovery rights when that clause is established and when it's used. It also fixes the drafting error we heard in terms of the referencing Section 13.3 instead of 13.1. I think it's important to put on the record what we intend and expect of this, and that's my belief.
Thank you. Any other discussion points or questions? Okay, clerk will call the roll, please, on the dash A63s.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Hyde?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
No.
Representative Burley?
Nope.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative
McPherson?
Aye.
Aye. Dash A63s are adopted, and I will take a final motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill, Senate Bill 838, as amended by those amendments, to the floor with the pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Cannon moves Senate Bill 838 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended by the A43s, A44s, A46s, A48s. Sure, I got this all right. A53s and A63s. Is there any discussion? Okay, seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
No.
Representative Burley?
No.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Dinkle?
Aye. Motion carries, and Senate Bill 838 moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Would you like me to carry this bill?
I got a bunch of questions for you. I was going to ask Representative Cannon if he would be interested in co-carrying it with me to the bill as vice chair.
Thank you.
Okay, with that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 838 and want to thank the committee for their hard work on a very complicated bill. I'll let the room clear out a little bit before we move on to, next we're going to do House Bill
3543.
I think we were trying to get it up to triple digits. Okay.
43, did you say?
Yes, 3543. With that, I'm going to open up a work session on House Bill 3543. And I do believe we still have Mr. Hendricks, or did he leave? We have a dash. Should have a, is it a dash 2 amendment in front of you? Would you like to come up, Mr. Vantoff, and talk about the dash 2s? Mr. Hendricks already ran off. The committee members, you should have the dash 2s to House Bill 3543, which we concluded testimony on Friday. And this is, it looks to me like it's been rewritten as I've gotten stuff, so to speak, but it looks like it's just been rewritten to replace the existing bill. You can walk us through the amendments. Appreciate it.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Dave Antoff for the record from the governor's office. The what you have in front of you is a rewrite. I don't know if you felt this gut and stuff of the bill from last week, and the amendments that came into this bill were kind of negotiated with a group of stakeholders. And I'll just touch on a couple of the key amendments on page. Well, the the first section, legislative findings, a few of the sections were deleted, or the original one and two were deleted, or the original one was deleted, I'm sorry. There's a new section nine right now on page three, starting at line five, that just makes it clear that as we go down this kind of this road of climate change inquiry, that we're going to, that the state will strive not to disadvantage Oregon businesses. The next significant change was to the section establishing the goals in section two, which is now sub three at page four, line five. And it's an express statement that the section doesn't create any new regulatory authority. The there were some minor changes to the section on the commission in terms of membership. The current version now provides for 25 members. It keeps the original 11 voting member block. It adds some express clarifications for some of those the 11 voting members, and that starts at page 5, line 10. Clarifies that members shall have experience in manufacturing, in energy, in transportation, in forestry, in agriculture, and in environmental policy. Those were spelled out in this amended version. In addition, the total membership was expanded to allow for a little more flexibility for the non-voting ex officio members. They're the same list of agency ex officio members that starts at page 6, line 9, is there, although there was an addition added. The Water Resources Director was added to that list. And then at line 16 on page 6, the new sub-H, it leaves open three additional ex officio non-voting members, which could come from either agencies or academia. And I think that covers most. There's one. Let me find the other addition here. Just one second, Madam Chair. At page 8, line 13, the new, there's a new subsection 3. And that's the section that they're talking about the commission's charge and what they're gonna what they'll do, and it states that the commission shall examine possible funding mechanisms to obtain low cost greenhouse gas emission reductions and energy efficiency enhancements, including but not limited to those in the natural gas sector. And then there was a removal. At the end of the bill, the old, I'm not sure that the prior version, there's a appropriation section that was deleted that had an unspecified amount of money going to DOE for its work staffing the commission, and then an unspecified amount of money going into the Climate Change Research Institute. And those two provisions were deleted from the bill.
Question.
I think that covers the.
So the appropriation section was deleted.
Correct.
Okay. Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So how do we pay for this group? And I compare this to, for example, the Big Look Committee right now with land use, where they're before or if they were, they came to Ways and Means looking for money to help staff that. And so how do we staff this thing if we don't have anything in here whatsoever for funding?
Madam Chair, Representative Burley, the Department of Energy has indicated that they think that they can staff it with their existing staffing. They've had a staff person that has spent portion of their time working with the governor's climate change integration group, and then prior to that with the carbon allocation task force, and prior to that with the global warming advisory group, these three prior groups the governor created. And that person would have the ability to work on the commission activities as well.
And we need to look at the Department of Energy's budget again.
Madam Chair. Representative Greg Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Share with us why we need legislation to do this. Why can't the governor, through executive order, just bring these folks together?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, the governor has, in fact, done that through his executive powers. And I think what the goal of this legislation was is to have the legislature step forward and say it, too, is going to get its feet wet with climate change issues, that it wanted to have its own commission that was looking at the issues as opposed to a commission just created through the executive branch, and that it wanted to establish the research center and to adopt the goals that the governor had previously announced. It's kind of a shared responsibility, I guess, goal that everyone's going to engage in work towards climate change policy.
Just a quick follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you anticipate what used to be called Oregon's meteorologist, now OSU's meteorologist, serving on this?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, I hadn't thought through who the membership of the commission would be. We certainly would need to look at making sure that the specified roles in here are covered, from the environmental to manufacturing, and the list that I went through. And there is position ex officio non-voting academic positions.
Talk to the speaker about it.
Well, I just hope the commission or the advisor group would be broad. It would represent all interests. Look at all opinions.
Madam Chair, if I can respond to that, because I think that's an important issue, and it was raised by a lot of the stakeholders when we were trying to craft agreement around what would be in this bill, and that was one of the reasons for fleshing out with a little bit more certainty some of the specific voting member categories. And I think my comment typically was that if this commission is going to really have any influence and have any impact, it's going to have to reflect the various stakeholders and really have a significant buy-in across multi-sectors and beliefs.
Representative Burley, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
Dave, last week, Ted Lawrenson from the Department of Forestry testified and gave us a copy of an April 25, his written testimony. I don't know if you've seen this or not, but the Department of Forestry feels there should be a few things amended into this bill to strengthen the policy statement about our forests and the role they can play. Are you familiar with this, and are these amendments in this dash 2 at all?
Madam Chair, Representative Burley, I have seen that those comments, and they were not incorporated into this version of the bill. The part of that was a timing issue, and in terms of getting these done for this hearing, but there was also some concerns raised about identifying only one of the many sectors that will play a significant role in the climate change discussion. There are going to be an opportunity for some amendments to be looked at on the Senate side, and I'm assuming that will be one of the areas that we try to look at. Is there a way to have more inclusivity in the bill in terms of specific call-outs to areas, including the forest sector, and the role it will play in addressing climate change? But they're not currently in the bill.
Okay. Thank you.
There is a member. I just want to note there is a member from the Department of Forestry. Is that correct? We have agriculture. The state forester would be serving on the commission, as many of the other members of the natural resource agencies. Okay, any other comments or questions for Mr. Vantoff before I take a motion? Okay. Representative Cannon.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3543.
Representative Cannon moves adoption of the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3543. Any discussion?
Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have to tell you, my first inclination was to vote no on this, but I want to let the governor's staff know how much I appreciate on page 2. On line 12, the recognition of hydropower generation, and and the positive effect it has on the state's workers, consumers, and residents. And as a result of that recognition, I'm going to give this a my vote.
Thank you, Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, I'd like to comment.
Representative Burley.
I'm going to be a no vote on this today. I'm going to reserve the right to change my mind on the floor, but I just feel very strongly about these forestry amendments. I mean, I know that, you know, the environmental community doesn't like the idea of this. We've obviously been fighting this with definitions of biomass and all that, but I think it's time that they realize that, you know, this is part of the process. This is, forestry does play a big role in it. We do know that, you know, the sequestration of carbon and whatnot, and I'll grant you we're still trying to figure out exactly what that role is, as I pointed out last week. But to me, that's why I think this needs to be in there. And we need to have more research. And I'm glad to see you got the state forester and somebody from forestry on the commission, and I do appreciate that. But until we get this stuff in here, I'm just going to be a no vote on it.
Okay. Any other comments? I would just like to thank the there has been hours and hours of work from many individuals who have donated time serving on this advisory committee for the governor. I've had the chance to meet with many of them, and I'm very optimistic that we will get some good information out of this the Global Warming Commission. I think we still have colleagues, as you know, we had two other companion bills, House Bill 3545 and House Bill 2859, cap and trade and emission standards, that we will not be moving forward at this time. However, there will be a lot of discussions on these issues during the interim, and part of it is based on the information that comes out of this group. So I think this is an important first step. As you know, unfortunately, there is not motion happening at the federal level to address these issues, at least in a timely fashion, and the states are the ones who are stepping up to the plate. California has probably the most aggressive climate change legislation in the country. Washington passed theirs about 2 weeks ago, and actually the West Coast, once again, is leading the charge on this, mainly because I think we are also going to probably see the impacts before a lot of other parts of the country do, especially when it comes to water supplies, coastal inundation. There's a lot of impacts that we don't fully understand or even begin to have a clear notion about how it will affect our states, both economically, for the agriculture industry, for tourism, for the health and safety of Oregonians. So I think this is an important first step, and I'm really pleased to see that we are going to be able to vote on this legislation today. So with that, the clerk will call the roll, please, and we're voting on the Dash 2 amendments.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Flyer?
Aye.
Representative Kinson?
No.
Representative Burley?
No.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries, and I will take another.
Madam Chair, motion. I move House Bill 3543 as amended by the Dash 2 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation, and the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded.
Okay. Representative Cannon moves House Bill 3543 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation, and the subsequent referral to Ways and Means Committee be rescinded. Is there any discussion? Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I share perhaps some of the concerns about the fact that, you know, that we have taken the Ways and Means portion of this off. I think we'd have a stronger bill if it was one that had additional funding attached to it. And I guess to remind folks of the testimony that we had on last week related to Senate Bill 576 of 1988 or 89, sorry, where we did set in statute emission reductions goals 20% below 1988 levels by 2005. Obviously, we did not meet those. We went in the other direction. I think it's important that we use this commission effectively to really take the next steps around emissions reductions and other techniques at reducing greenhouse gases. And so I look at this as the first step. I hope we're able to go farther quickly.
Okay, thank you. Representative Jensen and Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, the same comments I think that I made previously in relationship to this, particular bill and the concepts that we have here. If we're to believe the science or pseudoscience that was brought to this committee in preparation for this particular point on this bill about global warming. It was my understanding that the prediction or prognosis for the state of Washington is to, or state of Oregon, is to replace California or much of California as far as its food production and climate. If I understand correctly, again, the predictions are that we will change the form in which we get moisture in Oregon to, from snow and cold in the winter time to rain, as such. And Madam Chair, I think those are, you know, are very serious predictions, and I don't here pretend nor want to get into a discussion of whether or not they're, you know, whether they border on reality, but we're putting together some sort of a study group in relationship to global warming here, or proposing to, and there appears to be, to me, an inherent bias in this particular bill, a bias that somehow or another is leading people down a primrose path to where they're going to be able to do something about it. Again, if the science is correct, then there isn't anything we're going to be able to do about it. And the appropriate thing, as I indicated before, would be doing studies on how we deal with and how we react to a changing environment in our state. Which would include, I think, such things as more dam constructions to catch the water that is going to be coming in the form of rain instead of snow, and to store that water so that it will be able not just to irrigate our fields, but also to provide water for domestic use in the state. And Madam Chair, I don't want to take a lot of your time with this. We went over it once before. So let me just kind of stop with that. And I think we're not thinking about the future with this. And we have some sort of visions that somehow or another we're going to be able in this little state of Oregon to push back the consequences of this global warming, even though the United States, by the time this starts to come about, is probably going to be somewhat of a minor player if we consider what's going on today in China and in the Far East. We're going to have maybe much more impact and maybe very little that we can do in relationship to that. So I think we're addressing the wrong issue here. And as a consequence, Madam Chair, I regretfully cannot support the bill.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. I appreciate your comments. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I gave a yes vote to the Dash 2 amendments because of the recognition of hydro, and I appreciate that being included in there because I think hydro is an important piece of power production for the state of Oregon. But I also want to make sure I clarify and put on the record that I simply do not accept the basic premise behind the hypothesis in this bill. Like Representative Jensen, I think our efforts are misguided and misfocused on this. And quite often here at the local level, we like to assert that our friends and our neighbors are doing the wrong thing, when if we would actually step back and take a look at what our global neighbors are doing. And for those of you who have not had an opportunity to travel, I would strongly encourage you to travel. Travel to South America, travel over to China, travel over to the Asian Pacific, and find out what global denigration really is. I think actually our industrial and our commercial and our agricultural neighbors in this state ought to be applauded for the fabulous job they do in managing the environment. And so while I appreciate hydro being included in the dash twos, once again, I simply don't accept this basic premise, and I'll be voting no.
Okay, thank you. Any other comments? Representative Cannon.
Madam Chair, I don't want to get into a full-fledged discussion of global warming and its consequences, but I do want to make a couple of points in response to Representative Jensen and Representative Smith. One is that I believe that one can accept Representative Jensen's notion that we ought to have approaches to deal with the changing climate that we know is upon us without opposing the possibility, opposing a bill that allows us to and asks us to take the next step about can we stem that those changes. So I support his idea that, in fact, a changing climate is here, and I know he was saying perhaps it's here. I would say it is here, and that we ought to be adapting to it. At the same time, we ought to be taking those steps to keep it from changing any more than is already upon us. And then, you know, partly to Representative Smith, I think that while it is the case that the output emissions, greenhouse gas outputs from developing world, including China, may soon surpass U.S., we continue to be, as a nation, the number one emitter of greenhouse gases. And I think that our ability to leverage, our nation's ability to leverage change in other parts of the world is incumbent upon our willingness to accept some additional limitations in our own contribution to global warming. So for those reasons, I'm heartened by the approach in this bill. Again, I hope that we're able to go farther because, frankly, I don't think we have a whole lot of time, and I'm concerned about, as all of us are, I know, about the world and state that our children will inherit.
Any other comments?
Madam Chair.
Representative Jensen.
As a response,
I want to make it clear for the record that I'm not anti as far as cleaning up our environment. I in no way think that is bad or bad policy. I think we have an obligation to our environment, to our world, to be good stewards and to take care of it, to do our best to groom it. But I would have been enthusiastic about supporting the bill that we have before us. If that bill had made recognition that there is another issue here that needs to be thought about and needs to be considered. I recognize voting no on a bill like this may leave on the record something of an implication as far as my particular philosophies and beliefs are concerned. And that's okay. I'm willing to live with that, even if it is misconstrued, because I feel so strongly about the need to prepare for the future, not just to sit and wait for it to happen to us. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. And I just would like to add for the record, and I appreciate Representative Smith's comments. However, I have traveled extensively, have been spent a lot of time in Southeast Asia, in China, in South and Central America, a lot of different continents, and I actually think that most of the world looks to us as a leader, to lead by example, and that's one of the things I think we can do as a state. It seems like what can we do as a small state of Oregon, however, collectively, and I happen to chair the Council of State Governments Energy and Environment Committee. We're having a meeting with other Western states to talk about what we can do as Western states together and lead by example. And so I appreciate your comments, but we are, as Representative Cannon said, one of the world's largest consumers, and I think that we can lead by example as well and show that we can contain our own emissions. In the 15 years between my first and second visit to China, I was shocked and amazed at the difference. And the number of new coal-fired power plants coming online every year is going to affect us tremendously because we get the impacts here in the Pacific Northwest. So I think we can hopefully show our neighbors across the way that we, too, can be responsible. With that, clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
No.
Representative Burley?
No.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Dingell?
Aye. Motion. Gavel's down. Motion carries. Representative Jensen?
I'm not raising a point to that. I would just like to reserve the right to support this bill on the House floor.
Absolutely.
If I see some movement in the other direction for what we were talking about.
Okay, thank you. With that, House Bill 3543 is amended with the dash twos. We'll go to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Representative Cannon, would you like to carry the bill?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you. That will close the work session on House Bill 3543. And I will open up a work session on House Bill 3500. I thought you might want to carry it, Representative Jensen.
So I Representative Smith did.
I was going to volunteer to carry it, Madam Chair, but Representative Smith wanted it. He's a junior member from Eastern Oregon, and I really was bowing to let him have the experience.
I'm waiting for the opportunity for him to carry a bill. We still have some more here today. So I'm opened up a work session on House Bill 3500, and I would entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3500 to the floor without recommendation as to passage, and the bill would be referred to the Revenue Committee.
Representative Cannon has moved House Bill 3500 to the floor without recommendation as to passage, and the bill be referred to Revenue Committee. Any discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Pollution Control.
Aye.
Representative
Biden.
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
I think I must be voting no on this. I'm not sure.
It's without recommendation, Representative Jensen, but you can vote however you want.
It goes to revenue.
Goes to revenue.
Yeah.
That's okay.
You can still vote no. Why ruin your record today, you know?
That's right.
But we hope there's a few yeses down the road.
Okay.
So you are a yes or a no? Or?
Yeah, I'm a no.
Okay. For the record, please note that Representative Jensen's a no.
I don't like that.
Representative Burley.
He's excused.
Representative
Cannon?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Aye.
Madam Chair, I thought I...
Would you like to carry this? Oh.
I'd be delighted. I thought I made it clear about my attitude on tax credits.
Okay. That's why we're moving it without recommendation.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
With that, House Bill 3500 moves to revenue without recommendation. And I will close the work session on House Bill 3500. And I will now open up a work session on House Bill 2564. And we have somebody in the audience who wants to testify that wasn't able to testify. And even though this is a work session, because there was some miscommunication about the time of the hearing, I've asked him to come forward. And please state your name for the record.
Really quick, Madam Chair. Are we doing a public hearing on that?
Work session. I just said this is invited testimony because you cannot make it for the public hearing.
And I don't mean to be argumentative. I don't see it on the agenda. Oh, I apologize. There it is.
Yep.
Thank you.
2564.
Yep.
And we have a new committee member who... Actually, would you like to talk about the dash... are we up to the dash twos or dash...
Dash fours.
Dash fours first, and then, as you know, we're hearing the testimony on the dash fours, which I'm hoping you had a chance to look at.
Okay. Just did.
Great. Thank you.
My name is Tom Quintel, and members of the committee as chair. I just guess I'm coming before you as a citizen, and... really sympathizing, I guess, with your situation here on this particular bill. Seems kind of unfair, you guys, to have so many quick changes, it seems to me, on this bill at the last minute. It just seems unfair that you can make what I consider a really good, fair, honest judgment on some of this stuff when it hits you that fast. And I really, if I was in your position, I would have a problem, I think, with this kind of legislation. What I guess I'm concerned about is if we allow that kind of what I call slam dunk approach to legislation when there's already enough law, apparently, from what I hear, on the books to regulate the water users currently. I wasn't privy to your, I think, Representative Jensen's committee on the study of this approach to trying to work out a solution. And as a citizen on the outside trying to get a handle on what's going on somewhat late, it's been really overwhelming to me just to try to get the amendment. We got it about noon today from the committee administrator, Pat Petrino, and I really appreciate receiving it through email. But I mean, to me, this is really a tough situation for you guys. And you know, it seems like when we get this kind of law going forward, then the only alternative we have usually is the initiative process to repeal bad law because it's made so fast. And I don't think that's right. I don't think it's fair, not only for you, but for the citizens of Oregon. Pretty much, I guess, that's pretty much what I have to say on it. I just feel that there's a big void here. I feel this is supposed to be government for the people and of the people. And I just feel that, you know, it's just not a good way to do legislation. And I know there's time limits you guys have to get everything out off, you know, this committee onto the floor for a vote. So I guess my main concern is when I heard Representative Burley the other day bring out the law book and say, hey, you guys, there's plenty of laws on the books right now. What are you doing? And if it's for some special interest, then I have a real problem that's pushing the bill. So I would really encourage you guys to vote no, not only on this bill, but 2566, which I know we're not hearing right now. And I really appreciate the chance to appear before you. If you have any questions, I'm not as knowledgeable as you, but I've been trying to do a crash learn on what the costs are for a domestic well user on some of this stuff. And the water measurement devices that I see in this bill, I don't see any attempt to really eliminate the potential in the future from a well user, domestic well. We're not a significant diversion. Consequently, I suppose we're not in immediate need to be controlled yet on this, but anytime they declare a water critical area, it could affect us. So we're not immune in any way with our existing wells. And anyway, that's all really I have to say, and I appreciate your attention. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I apologize about the confusion with the committee schedule. I will say that it is very confusing for the public with our amendment system, and it is one I know that several of the representatives and I have lamented the fact that these are not online. So it basically, when it comes down to amendments, which happens, as you know, at the end of a discussion of the bill, it's very hard unless somebody's in the building.
That's right.
And I think it's a process that at the legislature we need to figure out a better way to get that information
out
to the public.
I agree, 100%.
Unless you are in Salem constantly, and many of the people in the back of the room are, but a lot of citizens aren't here on a regular basis. And now that we have, this is our new website, we have better access than ever before to committee schedules. We now have 72-hour notice, which last session went down to 24-hour notice, which was very hard for an average citizen to even know about a hearing in a timely manner. But one of the loopholes, I think, is still the fact that amendments cannot be accessed until you walk into this building. So I appreciate your comments and apologize for any confusion.
Thank you.
Thanks. That we will stand at ease because we're missing a committee member who wanted to be here. And we'll see if we can find him. I will actually, what I'll do is I'm going to ask Beth to walk through the dash fours, and then I'm going to ask Representative Jensen just to do a recap on the water measurement work group.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think what I'll do is highlight the differences in the dash fours from the dash two amendments that we went over last week. The first change is on page 1, beginning at line 8. There's a new whereas provision, which just states that the Water Resources Commission is responsible for establishing coordinated programs for the use and control of water resources of the state. Further down on line 15, we've added the phrase of significant diversions in high-priority watersheds to clarify that those are the diversions that are focused on in the first phase of the Water Resources Commission's plan. Moving to page 2 of the Dash 4 amendments, section 2 is the section that dealt with the direction to the department to implement the strategic water measurement program. There were a number of questions raised about the language used in this section and whether or not it was clear that the intention was to have the department implement the plan that the commission adopted. So there have been a few changes here. I guess most notably beginning on line 5, under the first phase of the plan, the department has identified to make it clear that this is a step that's been taken already. On line 12, we've added the words prioritize and establish requirements. Establish requirements was there, but the idea of prioritization was not. Line 13, the word significant was added, again, before the word diversions. Line 16 and 17, again, a clarification that the intent is that the department use a phased approach to implementing this plan and that it rely on available department staff and resources to implement the plan, that it would not require additional resources. Next, there were a number of sections in the Dash 2 amendments which would have amended current law that have been deleted from this amendment. Those were amendments to 537.190, which dealt with surface water permitting, 537.628, which addressed groundwater permitting, and 540.320, which dealt with the Water Master's authority to close a ditch. None of those amendments are currently in this draft Dash 4. Moving to page 3, line 12, we've corrected a reference there. Further down that same page, line 20, the Dash 2 amendments had included the words or stream in this provision, which was a mistake, so we've taken that language out.
Sorry.
Moving to page 4 of the amendment, section 6, there was a phrase in the Dash 2 amendment that added a trigger for the declaration of a serious water management problem area, which was an in-stream water right being not met, or the designation of a wild and scenic river or state scenic waterway. Those provisions have been taken out of the Dash 4 amendments. And then I think the two final changes are on the final page, page 6 of the Dash 4 amendment. The sunset provision has been changed to January 2nd of 2010, and then there's been an emergency clause added to the Dash 4s, which I think is primarily to address the grant program and getting that started up.
Okay, thank you, Beth. Sorry, we had to track down some of our members. They're sort of like cats. Representative Jensen.
Madam Chair, the rehash or the review of the work group, the chair did assign a work group to work on this, and there have been obviously a couple of major gyrations that have taken place, both coming out of that work group and with subsequent feedback that we have received from the users. I hate the word stakeholders, but the stakeholders in this in the area of water and water policy. Where we're at today, looking at the Dash 4 amendments, has had some significant opportunity, I think, to be reviewed by folks. And Madam Chair, I do want to move to make a conceptual amendment to the Dash 4s, and specifically, Madam Chair, that's in Section 2, Sub 3, where it says, in furtherance of this policy, the Water Resource Department currently says shall implement the Strategic Water Measurement Program adopted by the Water Resource Commission in 2000. And, Madam Chair, I would propose to put a more permissive word, may implement there. So I propose the amendment to scratch shall and insert may. And for that, just for pure simplicity purposes, I think it could be implied that even if the Water Resources Commission changed this policy in 2015, that the Water Resources Department now, Water Resources Department does have in statute
codification of that policy by implication that the language is here in the bill. So to provide a little more of a permissive sort of thing with this, I don't think it at all hinders or hurts the intent of this measure, but I think it would prevent us some problems on down the line. Now, having said that, let me say that I think generally the folks that were in the work group, the preponderance, if I recall correctly, and I would stand to be corrected by various groups, but the preponderance of the opinion was that people were pleased with the water resources strategic water measurement program as it is set up here by the commission in 2000, and certainly supported the implementation or the continuation of that. And it was my impression that the folks were not all that anti or weren't anti in relationship to, in essence, this legislative body, this particular session, providing some ultimate justification or some ultimate, recognition of that by passing forth a bill similar to what we have here before us today.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. I'd like to call Debbie Colbert up from the Water Resources Department. And Debbie, thank you for participating in the work group and many, many hours of hard work on this. I'd certainly like to get your comments on this amendment and then the conceptual amendment that was just offered.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Debbie Colbert with the Water Resources Department. And in terms of the Dash 4 amendments, the department is supportive of these amendments. We think that it endorses our commission's existing strategy. We are happy to report back to the legislature about our progress and, in fact, already report annually to our Water Resources Commission on our progress. And we also are appreciative of the cost share program that these Dash 4 amendments would set up. We think that will help in terms of working with water users as we go forth and are implementing our commission's current strategy.
And also, I'd like to call up, why don't you stay there, but we have Melissa Leone from OWEB, Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. And just want to, for the record, if you can mention about the grant program. And as my understanding, by the way, I just received, I think, last week, and it was sent out to members of the committee and I think all the members of the Water Measurement Work Group that the state of Washington requires all water users within a mile of the Columbia River to measure their water use as part of their big strategic plan, and that they just allocated $1 million towards water measurement in the state of Washington. I mean, if you can comment on our much smaller proposed program.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Melissa Leone with the Oregon Watershed Enhancement Board. This is a significantly smaller program that we're proposing here, using some of the existing Measure 66 lottery dollars, capital and capital research dollars, to assist the Department of Water Resources in implementing their plan.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions or follow-ups?
Just a comment, Madam Chair, that there's other legislation that has been before this committee that would assure some significant financial contribution to, this program, at least as it is related in the main stem of the Columbia. Whether this bill passes or not, but would depend on passage of other bills or another bill, and where we would make a couple million dollars a year commitment to the stream flow and to the habitat restoration.
Yeah, we're going to stand at ease because I have been told by the clerk's office as far as we are highly, discouraged from doing conceptual amendments. And so I have our committee staff checking on that. So the committee will stand at ease and we'll find out.
Madam Chair, There's no question that the clerk staff recommends against conceptual amendments. The maker of the amendment is quite aware of that. And while the clerk staff recommends against it, conceptual amendments are done with some regularity, and the clerk...
I just want to make sure I'm not getting in trouble with Ramona, because that's a very important element. Any other questions for the panel?
Madam Chair, I guess I'd like to understand a little better the consequences of this proposed conceptual amendment. So it's a question for Debbie. The Water Resources Department has adopted or the Commission has adopted the strategic measurement plan. You're in the middle of implementation now, if I'm correct, or beginning implementation already?
Madam Chair, Representative, that's correct.
And this, without amendment, these dash twos would simply require you to keep doing what you're doing, which is implement this plan?
Madam Chair, Representative Cannon, that's correct.
And this conceptual amendment would provide more permissive language, I suppose, to say if you stopped implementing, you wouldn't be in violation of the statute. Is that also the case?
Madam Chair, Representative, the going from shall to may, I think, as Representative Jensen mentioned, would deal with the event that our commission had formally changed its strategic measurement plan, and that we were no longer implementing the year 2000 version of that plan, that we wouldn't be prevented from going forward with a 2009 version and implementing it instead.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. There's a conceptual amendment has been proposed. Representative Jensen moves to amend Bill number 2564, the dash fours, section 2, line 3, Water Resources Department may implement. Is there any discussion? I think we've just had quite a bit of discussion on that.
So, Madam Chair, I'm sorry. So the change is on page 2, line 3, change shall to may?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there any objections to the motion? Okay, seeing none, the motion passes, and I'll accept a motion.
Madam Chair.
Representative Jensen.
I would move House Bill 2564 dash 4. I would move the dash 4 amendments as conceptually amended to House Bill 2564.
Okay, Representative Jensen moves the dash 4 amendments to House Bill 2564. To the floor with the due pass recommendation as amended with the conceptual amendments.
We're not ready.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Representative Jensen has moved the dash four amendments as amended with the conceptual amendment of shall to may. And there's adoption of that in front of the committee. Any discussion? Okay. Any objection? And Representative Smith, so noted for the record. With that, the motion carries.
Madam Chair.
Representative Jensen.
So I move.
You threw me off there with a conceptual amendment.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I should have written it out, and my apologies to you. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2564 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
There's also a subsequent... There's a rescinding of the subsequent referral to the Ways and Means since the fiscal has been taken out of the bill. So you just have to add that to your motion.
With the rescinding of the subsequent referral to the Ways and Means.
So Representative Jensen moves House Bill 2564 as amended with the dash fours as conceptually amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. And the referral to Ways and Means Subcommittee be rescinded. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Byer?
No.
Representative King? Representative Jensen?
He said no.
Representative Burns?
No.
Representative King?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries, and Nina Carrier. Representative Jansen will carry House Bill 2564 to the floor. With that, I will close House Bill, the work session on House Bill 2564. Colleagues, I'm going to, do I need to recess the
Madam
public
Chair,
hearing?
Madam Chair, before you do that, this committee adjourn. I want to serve notice of a possible minority report on Senate Bill 838A.
We are recessed. We're actually not adjourning, so we will not be adjourning.
But we can still make the vote.
Yeah, we can still make it, but we're not adjourning until whenever we're done this evening. So we will be back in this room at 5 o'clock this evening, and with that, we are in recess. Committee, and we're going to open up a work session on House Bill 3203. Kat, could you give us a reminder of what this is, and then we have some amendments coming our way.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3203 creates the Water Reuse and Storage Investment Fund and continuously appropriates money in the fund to the Economic and Community Development Department for use in administering a grants program to fund studies in anticipation of developing water reuse and storage sites.
Okay, thank you. And we have two people that are going to walk us through the amendments, which are going to be delivered to us any moment now.
Thank you, Mr. or Madam Chair.
It's okay. I get called Mr. all the time.
For the committee, I'm Willie Tiffany with the League of Oregon Cities, here on behalf of a coalition of the Association of Oregon Nurseries, Farm Bureau Federation, the Special Districts Association, and the Oregon Water Resources Congress, and the Umatilla Tribe. We have worked, you heard House Bill 3203 some time ago. The purpose of this bill was to establish a fund for those upfront costs for potential storage, conservation, and reuse projects. Those types of upfront costs that can't be typically paid back through bonding and traditional financing methods. However, those costs that are out there to meet environmental interests, environmental needs, so we site these projects in the most friendly way possible. Also, to do the basic needs analysis, the hydraulic analysis, to make sure that the projects can move forward. You may recall from the initial hearing, we did have opposition from Water Watch. And my good friend Kimberly Priestley is sitting next to me from Water Watch. We spent the better part of 30 minutes, about an hour ago, trying to come to some compromise on the bill. We have also worked with the departments, the Water Resources Department and the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. Ann Hannes couldn't be here, but she fully supports the direction we're going. So let me walk you through the conceptual amendments, which basically are the dash ones, which our coalition drafted, and the dash two amendments, which Water Watch drafted. You'll see a copy of both of those, hand engrossed, with some deletions and some very small additions. And what we tried to do is mesh these together for you in one hand engrossed copy.
That's all they have.
That's all they have at this point. Okay. The one hand engrossed copy of the dash one amendments. That's what should be before you. The top right corner should say the HB 3203-1 hand engrossed combined with parts of dash two. So hopefully that's the same document folks were looking at. To briefly walk you through it, the first page largely is at the request of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department. They wanted a finding section in this bill to help direct their activities, and that language comes from them. I do need to also put on the record a couple of items. One, that Water Watch asked us to put on the record. In line four, it talks about the grants that or the entities that could receive the grants under this bill. List them as public bodies, tribes, and private entities. I want to clear for the record that by private entities, we're including non-governmental organizations and 501c3. That's so when Oregon Economic and Community Development Department goes to rulemaking, they'll have that intent from the proponents of the bill on the record. As we move to page two, we really get into the nuts and bolts of how the funding would be determined. Again, there are a number of amendments here from the original bill based on how Oregon Economic Community Development Department funds these programs. There's a distinction between commission and department. Department refers to the Oregon Economic and Development Department. Commission refers to the Water Resources Commission, thereby giving that commission rulemaking to institute priority setting under this bill. We do have, you'll see, the first hand engrossed or conceptual amendment on this page on line 15. The intent was, as you'll see in line 14, that the maximum potential grant is $250,000. We were also supporting the concept that that would be at least 50% matched by the local entity, but could be matched more than 50% by the local entity. So on line 15, we added at least after is, so it reads, must be matched by funding from another source that is at least a dollar-for-dollar match of the grant amount, and simply deleted the next sentence. So that should make it clear that that intent follows through. We also then, on line 21, begin the discussion of the types of analysis or planning that would be eligible. You may recall the original bill was very limited, only had the first three, A, B, and C, there in lines 25, 26, 27. We added, at the Water Resources Department's request, lines 28, 29, and 30. Additionally, on the page 3, again, of the hand engrossed, this is where the Dash 2 amendments come into play. We added some additional project or planning categories based on the Dash 2 amendments. In the next, now we're in the real conceptual part. Below those categories, you will see an addition that was originally in lines 2 and 3 of the Dash 1 amendments. We would want to keep those, include those here. However, we did need to delete the word jointly. You may see there. Again, I'll read it for you. In line 28, delete Water Resources Department shall adopt rules and insert Department. Again, that's the Economic Development Department, and the Commission, that's the Water Resources Commission, shall adopt rules. Those two entities can't jointly adopt rules. So that's the intent of that amendment. Also, we wanted to include the very last two lines from the Dash 2 amendments that we believe are helpful, and that's the next sentence on the list there in line 29 after section, the term in section, insert shall prioritize project funding under this section. That's again to require the Water Resources Department to do a prioritization of projects, not just first come, first serve. We agree that that's important. And then, unfortunately, Madam Chair, while the original bill authorized Economic Development Department or the Treasurer on their behalf to issue $5 million in lottery bonds for this purpose, we were informed that the Ways and Means Committee was not prepared to make that investment at this point in time. So what we'd like to do is include the last paragraph here on the conceptual amendments, which appropriate $1 from the general fund for the establishment of the fund. And let me just tell you the intent there. We are trying, as we testified in the original hearing, we do have an appropriations request in through our federal delegation, and we're hopeful that in the future we will be able to leverage some resources from the federal government. With this bill, we'll be able to have a fund established, and under Oregon law, you need at least a dollar to establish a fund. Thereby, we can come back to the E-Board for future limitation if federal funds do become available. So hopefully that's... I did also, on behalf of the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, they asked me to put on the record that this fund in no way would be intertwined with their community development funds, specifically the Special Public Works Fund or the Water Wastewater Fund. It would be an independent fund operating on its own. And with that, I turn it over to Kimberly.
For the record, my name is Kimberly Priestley, and I'm here representing Water Watch of Oregon, and I actually have nothing to add to Willie's testimony. I'm here just for question purposes only.
Okay. And you've seen the hand engrossed and...
Yes, and we in agreement with folks on this.
Okay. Willie, I had a question for you. What is the most likely source of federal funding for these types of projects?
Madam Chair, there are variety of potential sources. Right now, our appropriations request is in with the Corps of Engineers budget. And that's from our federal partners are directing us that that's the most likely resource at this point in time. There's also, potentials with the Bureau of Reclamation. There's potentials with the Department of Interior. But I think the Army Corps is where we're directed at this point in time. But as the congressional, as Congress moves along, as it moves, we're stand ready to adjust where those appropriations might come from. I did want to add, Madam Chair, at this point in time, this is also part of the governor's support in terms of his Columbia River strategy, so the governor does support this legislation as well.
Thank you. I think Representative Burley has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On this Hand and Gross dash one, wherever you want to refer to it, on the second page of this amendment, lines 25 through 27 talks about the hydrologic refill, the water needs, the refined hydrologic analysis, which if you look at the bill on page 1, this is the original bill, page 1, lines 25 through 27, that's what's there. But what your amendment does is it adds on all these additional things, the engineering, financial feasibility, geologic analyses, water exchange studies, optimum peak collection, blah, 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 all these things. Where'd they come from?
Madam Chair and Representative Burley, good. I'm glad you brought that topic up. You will notice in line 23 on the Hand and Gross amendments, there is also a substantive change from the original bill that says the planning study may include but is not limited to. So these are just categories of potential funding opportunities. The D, E, and F come from the Water Resources Department, had asked us to broaden those categories of potentials to expressly put in the statute the types of things that they saw would be eligible for these projects. That's the engineering and financial feasibility studies, geologic analysis, and then, that's D and E. Section F, the very last line on that page, comes from the Umatilla Tribe, who you may recall gave a presentation with respect to the water exchange project that they have, and they are seeking federal funding for. We think their project, if this fund was moved forward and actually achieved funding, would be a very good place for them to find those funds. On the third page, those are more detailed categories that may be subsumed in some of the other ones before them, but they come from Water Watch, so I would turn it over to Kimberly if you have any further clarification.
Okay. Chair Dingfelder, Representative Burley, the idea here was, when evaluating these type of projects, whether it's a reuse or conservation or storage project, there are a number of things that need to be analyzed, from costs to environmental effects to some of the hydrological stuff that's already listed there. And this is just to an expansion of the original list, essentially just so folks can have a laundry list so they know what is covered. As Willie said, it's a may, it's not a shall. I think it's more just to put it out there so folks understand that they can get money for this if they so choose.
Okay, any other questions?
Thank you for that answer. And then I do appreciate, I did see that it's may include but is not limited to. I was just curious where the other items came from. On what I guess would be page 3 of the amendment, it says in line 28, the lead Water Resources Department shall adopt rules and insert department and the commission shall adopt rules. This language, and I'm not the attorney here, but it seems kind of, it's either one or the other is going to adopt the rules, I would think, or are we actually, is this setting up where we could have two sets of rules, one the commission adopts and one that the department adopts?
Madam Chair and Representative Burley, thank you for the question. We actually had 5 lawyers sitting around the table trying to figure this out as well. The way the Dash 1 amendments are drafted is it expressly at the beginning refers to two entities, the Economic Development Department who does have rulemaking authority, and the Water Resources Commission. So throughout the Dash 1 amendments, you will see references to the department and or the commission, which go back to that original reference. So by this section, really what this section is referring to and giving rulemaking authority to is the department, which refers back to the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department, and then the commission, which is the Water Resources Commission. That's why we needed to delete the term jointly, because we're talking about two departments, two entities who each have independent rulemaking authority.
It's only CDD and the Water Resources Commission, is correct?
That's correct.
Right. It's not the Water Resources Department and the commission.
I hear that, but I don't see that.
Well, if we look back to page one of the Hand and Gross Amendments, the understanding I have, not being an attorney either, Representative Burley, but the interpretation I believe out there is under the first whereas section, that sets the tone for the rest, or the reference for the rest of the amendment, where we're referring to the Economic and Community Development Department, and then secondly there in line three, the Water Resources Commission. So throughout the amendments from that point forward, when we refer to the department, the Water Resources Department is never referenced. Only the commission is referenced, and vice versa for the Economic and Community Development Department.
We could get some LC up here if you want clarification. Representative Jensen.
I join Representative Burley in some confusion on this. And frequently when I read these sort of things, we indicate in the language that we're referring hereafter Economic and Community Development Department is Department and Water Resources Commission as commission type of thing. And I am thus, in spite of all of the great legal advice that you obviously have had, I think this leaves some confusion involved, and I'm not sure why you wouldn't spell that out rather than leave the potential for confusion.
Do you want to? I can have the Department of Water Resources come up,
yeah,
or we can try to have somebody from LC if they're still here. I think they're probably spending the night. So,
say, Madam Chair and Representative Jensen, we did, many around the table negotiating this bill this afternoon had those exact same concerns. The department seemed comfortable, both departments signing off on that. However, if Ms. Colbert would like to join us at the table, she might talk about the rationale there. However, as Ms. Priestley just pointed out, we can easily just insert Water Resource or Oregon Economic Development Commission.
Known as the department.
Or department. And
Water Resources is concern I have.
Debbie, why don't you go ahead?
That's a real good point.
Debbie, why don't you go ahead and address that?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we did have this exact discussion earlier today, and in the end, went through the bill and looked at every place that it referred to department and confirmed that it was always referring to economic development as it first is named in the whereas sections,
and that
with these amendments, it would always refer to us as the Water Resources
Well,
Commission.
Well, can we do, since this is a conceptual amendment, can we say, make some clarification that hereafter known as the department, and then same thing for Water Resources Commission, hereafter known as the commission? By that, or we just spell it out in everywhere that it's spelled out here?
Madam Chair, in my non-legal world that I live in, when I write a letter and I want to refer to this, I just put in parentheses. So then after this whole spelling out the Economic Development Department, I put in parentheses department. Something of that. I'm just confused with it unless you
Albarton.
Spell it out.
Is he still here? Because we can G. have G. Okay. What I'm going to do then is we'll recess this hearing, and we will try to see if we can get legislative counsel. Somebody can go down and run and try to get legislative counsel. Well, we will then open up our next hearing and then reopen up this one.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Madam Chair.
I don't know. I'm going to have Beth come up, and then I'm going to have Pat go with you to try to get legislative council and see if they can come up. So with that, I'm going to recess House Bill 3203.
Before you open the next one, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
I forget what it was. you carry on.
Can I jump in while he's thinking?
I'm just wondering whether all of this amendment, the original bill goes to Ways and Means, right?
Right.
If and it passes.
This also goes to Ways and Means.
What?
This also goes to Ways and Means.
This would?
Yes.
I'm wondering why they just, there's nothing fundamentally, why they just don't amend it. They have a chance to figure these things out rather than coming in.
But we'll see, and if we can't, then we won't do that.
Okay.
I appreciate the suggestion.
Madam Chair, before we move on to the next item of business, I just wanted to go on record giving notice of a potential minority report on Senate Bill 8388.
Okay. So noted. And with that, then, I will open up a work session on. We're still in recess on this, so that's okay to open up another work session, right? Okay. Open up a work session on House Bill 2566, and I will entertain a motion on House Bill 2566.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2566 with a two-pass recommendation. I'm going to withdraw what I just said and start over again.
Okay. Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the -2 amendments to House Bill 2566.
Okay. Representative Cannon moves the -2 amendments to House Bill 2566.
I was going to
recognize Representative McPherson. I had his hand up. Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I support the -2 amendments and the conceptual what's going on here with House Bill 2566. This is a bill that's about groundwater, and one of the things we've learned is that as our population grows and we have increasing pressure on aquifers, we can't be as open to just allowing people to put down wells and draw water out of aquifers as we have been in the past. And this is, I think, a responsible move toward restricting the amount of water that can be drawn, making sure that it's drawn in a quantity that is appropriate to just an additional residential use, which is the scale of what's going on here. And I think we're just moving to a point within the state where we can't be as free and easy about allowing people to just tap into aquifers at quantities of draw that are inconsistent with a small exempt use.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Burley.
Madam Chair, thank you. I'd like to move that the committee adopt House Bill 2566-3 amendment that's before you.
Okay, there's there's two motions on the table now. You would have to amend the existing motion. We've already moved the -2, so we need to vote on the -2s first. Right?
Or amend.
Or you can amend the motion.
Move to amend the motion.
Or you can let the -2s come or go and then
Make the motion for the -3s. Okay, so we have a motion to amend the bill of the -2s. Any other discussion on that? Okay, seeing none, are there any objections?
Yes.
Okay, so noted. Three objections noted. Okay, the -2s are adopted.
Now, Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the -3 amendments to House Bill 2566.
Okay, there's a motion to adopt the -3s to House Bill 2566. Is there any discussion?
I'd like to ask that we call Mr. Kosasan up to explain this amendment.
Okay, Richard. And I'm trying to do this expeditiously because we have two members who would like to get back to their committee. Appreciate it.
Madam Chair, Richard Kosasan, Water for Life. The amendments embodied in 2566-3 was a concept put together in short notice, but very clearly it is a concept to develop a task force, six members, basically to take a look at the entire issue associated with groundwater and the continuing debate that we have had with groundwater this session. It was our hope that there would be some consideration given to 2566-3 in lieu of the dash 2 amendments. But I think the committee has acted on the dash 2 amendments.
Mr. Christensen, I have a suggestion for amending this motion, and that would be to adopt the dash 3s minus lines 1 and 2 and amend the bill by adding what is listed as section 1, but add it to the bill in addition to the dash 2s, removing lines 1 and 2. I support the dash 3s minus the first two sentences. So if you would be amenable to that, I would amend the motion.
That would be one consideration, and I think a continuing look at this issue would be very prudent.
Mm-hmm. And I support
one
that.
Issue that I would like to raise with the dash 2 amendment is that I think you have a significant problem specifically with the language contained in section 2. Rather than a grandfather clause, this could be kind of described as a middle-aged uncle clause. The amendments to 537-545 by Section 1 of this Act do not apply to any uses of groundwater for which a log has been filed prior to the effective date of the 2007 Act. That's fine, but the application of this language strictly would impact those uses, those beneficial uses of groundwater prior to 1955 when the Groundwater Act became effective. Thus, you are significantly impacting, quote, an undetermined vested right, and those would be similar to surface water rights yet to be adjudicated. So I literally construed, I think that is very problematic.
Mr. Kosan, that was not the intent, and my proposal is that since this is going to Ways and Means, which two of the members already sit on this committee, we can send it down there and see if we can work out with the new language of the dash threes. But I would like to sit down with the Legislative Council because that was not the intent. It was to be, prospective, basically, towards the future and not, and it was to grandfather in existing exempt uses. So I'm stating that for the record, just to make
thank
it clear.
Thank you, Madam okay? Chair.
Thank you. So with that, we have an amended motion. This is a conceptual amendment to delete line 1 and 2 of the dash 3s. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, I won't agree to the amendment of amendment number 3. And the reason for that is because I believe that dash 3, the purpose here is so that we're not enacting the dash 2. We're not dealing with the exempt uses, but instead we're trying to put together a big look, if you will, task force to look into the issues associated with the groundwater use and this type of stuff. So I won't agree to the amendment motion on the dash 3.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Burley. And I actually do support the amended dash 3 because I think that regardless of I think this is a good policy to have sort of, if you want to call it, a big look for groundwater, and that's something I think is absolutely needed in the state. But I also think that we need to look at our existing opportunity to address the lack of, first of all, resources to fund a groundwater studies. As you know, that was a big issue in our Ways and Means Subcommittee, and that we, as I sort of half-jokingly said, the $125,000 that we were able to fund was a drop in the bucket in relation to the real need for meaningful groundwater investigations and studies in the states to protect existing water rights and to make sure that we aren't impacting existing groundwater right holders. So I would, as I have a motion to amend the dash 3s, I would ask the clerk to call the roll.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. So the motion is on the conceptually amended dash 3s?
Right, which was to delete lines 1 and 2 and then insert the task force into the existing bill. So, and then we will take a separate vote on, we've already adopted the dash 2s. So it would add the dash 3s to the bill minus lines 1 and 2.
And Madam Chair, if
I could set up a task force during the interim to look at the big picture of groundwater issues. Representative McPherson.
just I was realizing that in order to conceptually amend, I could bring probably a little more precision to the conceptual amendment.
So it's good to have an attorney
so
on
that
the
on the first line of the dash threes, because what we need to do is to put this text into between sections 4 and 5 of the section numbers of the dash twos, so it would come ahead of captions, so we would change the first line so it would read on page 10 of the dash two amendments to the bill. In line 12, insert, then we would delete all of line 2, and then starting on line 3, the section reference there would be, we would replace 1 with 5, and over on the second page of the dash 3, section 2 would become section 6.
Okay.
And on the on page 3, that section reference would be section 7. Although that actually probably should, actually that should probably be a section 8, because the emergency clause probably should be at the end. We would then insert. We would resume then in the dash threes at the end of the second page. And do an insertion, or maybe the top of the page 3, we would insert the following at the end of, or on page 10, line 19 of the dash 2s.
And that would be section, that would be now section 8, correct?
Right.
Okay. All right, so as moved by Representative McPherson, we will now call the roll.
Just one quick point of discussion, Madam Chair. I guess courtesy vote yes. I do have some concerns, and I would hope that the Ways and Means Committee, if that's where it's going and this is adopted, would look at expanding the charge of the task force beyond just those basins where groundwater management problems already exist. I think part of the hope here is to look proactively into the future. I'm also concerned about Section 2. Well, it's being renumbered, but that would repeal this task force at the beginning of the 2009 session.
All right, so noted for the record. And we will have that discussion in Ways and Means when it gets down there. Okay. So actually with the amended motion as Representative McPherson, clerk will call the roll, and then we'll vote on the entire bill.
Madam Chair. Right.
Representative Jensen.
We've gotten, and I understand, and I got a note from the chair indicating, see what you've started. But, Madam Chair, I tried to be true to the idea of, the conceptual amendments, and we dealt with one word in one bill, and quite frankly, we're getting a little convoluted for my mind at 6:10 on this day, and I'm not sure I understand who's on second right now.
Well, I appreciate it, Representative Jensen. We are not changing. That's why I don't want to change the wording in the dash threes. And what we are just changing is the numbering of the sections, so how it will fit in with the original bill. That's why I'm not changing any of the wording. Okay. Clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
No.
Representative Burley?
No.
Representative
Cannon.
Aye.
Representative McPherson.
Aye.
Aye. So the dash threes as conceptually amended are adopted. And with that, we'll take a motion for the bill.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2566 as amended by the dash threes and
dash
the dash twos to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay. Representative Cannon has moved House Bill 2566 as amended with the dash twos and the conceptually amended dash threes to the floor with the due pass recommendation and its subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Representative Jensen.
To further show my confusion as we're with this, I thought we were just previously voting on the conceptual amendment to
the dash three, and having completed the vote on the conceptual amendment, would it not then be, if we're, this is the route we're going, the motion to move the dash three amendment as conceptually amended into House Bill 2566 before we get there? I mean, we haven't really voted in my, as I understand it,
on the
dash three amendments. We voted on the conceptual amendment.
Richard Jensen has a good point, because there was a motion to move the dash threes, and then there was a motion to conceptually amend the dash threes, but the conceptually amended dash threes need to be moved into the bill, and I appreciate his Representative Jensen's attention to that point.
So I need a motion to adopt the dash threes.
I will, Madam Chair, I will move the conceptually amended dash three amendments into House Bill 2566.
Okay, thank you. Representative McPherson moves the conceptually amended dash threes into House Bill 2566. The clerk will call the roll.
Sorry about the confusion, and I appreciate this amendment. I must strongly comment that the good representative from Lake Oswego has just blown my cover as getting a little slower in the late afternoon hours.
I've watched my colleague over several sessions, and I would never suggest that is the case.
I think you're just warming up at this time in the afternoon, Representative Jensen, from what I've observed.
Well,
okay, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Smith?
No.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
Oh, my God. Aye.
Representative Burley?
No.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Aye. Now the dash threes have been
Madam Chair,
adopted.
I move House Bill 2566 as amended by the dash twos and dash threes conceptually to the floor with a due pass recommendation and subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor to adopt the dash twos and dash threes into House Bill 2566 and move House Bill 2566 to the floor with a due pass recommendation referred to Ways and Means Committee. Is there any discussion? Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I can't wait till this comes to our subcommittee in Ways and Means, because this has been so much fun so far. Madam Chair, I mean, with all due respect, there's just no way I can vote for this bill, because you know, we heard in the work group, we heard during hearings that, in my mind, there's no need for this bill. There's no clearly identified problem. The amount of water that's appropriated under these exempt wells is very, very small. Somebody testified it's a solution looking for a problem. But the thing that really bothers me the most about this is the fact that the Water Resources Commission and the department has the authority in the statutes to deal with these problems. And for whatever reason, they're not dealing with them. And, you know, I'm of the opinion, if we're going to do this, if we're going to do their job for them, then maybe we should get rid of the Water Resources Commission. But I just feel very strongly about that, and I don't think we should be dealing with this issue. They've got the authority to deal with it, and I think they should be dealing with it if it's a problem.
Thank you, Representative Burley. Any other comments, Representative Jensen?
Madam Chair, thank you. I would agree with my good friend, the representative from Bend, on this. I think the department has the authority, has the ability to do everything that they need here, and I find no compelling argument to enact into statute a law to do this when the authority already exists there. And if they are not, the commission is not doing something at this particular time. Failing to have the commission here to define for us what it is, or what reasons there may be for the department's failure, or their reasons for not pressing harder on the department. I'm sorry, Madam Chair, I just have real difficulty.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. Representative Byer.
Thank you.
Chair. I have certainly heard from lots of people on this bill who aren't real crazy about it, and a few of them were constituents of mine, and I have been trying to contact them to find out whether their concerns were with the original bill, with the amended bill. I haven't been able to get that information. I do know through other people that my city is fine with this bill. I'm going to go ahead today and give a courtesy vote to move this to Ways and Means, but until I get further clarification, I'm going to reserve the right to vote no if it comes to the floor.
Thank you, Representative Beyer. Any other comments? Okay. I appreciate the comments and all the hard work of the committee members. One of the things that this the Dash 2 amendments will do is help what I've heard a big need for the department is more resources in order to do the work to protect existing water rights, especially groundwater right holders, from further injury. And with the proposed new fee, and that's one of the reasons it's going to Ways and Means, I think there will be a lot of discussion about that and how we can help the Water Resources Department get the resources they need to make sure that we're protecting groundwater for all users. With that, I will ask the clerk to call the roll for the full bill, please.
Representative Smith.
No.
Representative Beyer.
Aye.
Representative Jensen.
No.
Representative Burley.
No.
Representative Cannon.
Aye.
Representative McPherson.
Aye.
Chair Hufeld.
Aye. With that, the motion carries. House Bill 2566 is amended with the dash twos and threes. We'll go to the full, go to the Ways and Means Committee with the due pass recommendation. And with that, the work session on House Bill 2566 is closed, and I will close the House Energy and Environment Committee. For
you just closed the committee.
Uh-oh. I will reopen the House Energy and Environment Committee because we are recessed for House Bill 3203.
I'm sure you can do that.
No, I just reopened it.
I don't think you can do
you
that.
You can't do that.
I think Ramona's in the office. You better check her.
The Environment Committee.
I'm sure. I think she said Ramona's coming down.
Ramona's coming. Did you get email?
Do we have unanimous consent?
We have no objections.
What?
No. Do we have no objections to reopen this committee so we can? closing the House Energy and Environment Committee without, well, a work session was still open on House Bill 3203, so I would like unanimous consent to reopen.
To withdraw your motion.
To withdraw my motion to adjourn for the House Energy and Environment Committee. Okay, any objections? Seeing none, the motion is withdrawn. And
the request is granted.
And now I will. We will unrecess House Bill 3203. Thank you, Ramona. Learning experience of being chair. Thank you, Representative Jensen.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Willie, you better come up quickly.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay,
for the record.
So we are now still in work session on House Bill 3203.
Willie Tiffany with the League of Oregon Cities, and we'll try to get this problem child moved along as quick as possible. Yeah. You should have in front of you. I believe the committee administrator is passing out now the hand-engrossed version 2 version of the hand-engrossed -1 amendments. We could not completely solve the issue that was raised by the committee, but we believe we do have, or clarify the issue, we believe we do have a solution. We will revert back to the language in the original bill, which there is a requirement in the original bill that the Oregon Economic and Community Development Department must establish through an MOU an agreement with the Water Resources Commission. The Water Resources Commission, in now, again, the hand-engrossed version 2, page 3, I believe yours is handwritten, from the committee administrator, which should say in line 28, delete department and insert commission, thereby clarifying that the department doesn't have rulemaking authority, the commission does. Thereby, they are the overriding department in terms of the only department with express rulemaking authority within these amendments. If we need to add additional amendments whereby we grant the Economic and Community Development Department rulemaking authority for the purposes of specific sections, we can do that in the Ways and Means Committee if necessary, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you for this clarification, Willie. I apologize about the inconvenience. So I will take a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that the -1 amendments to House Bill 3203, as conceptually amended in the hand-engrossed copy that is in the hands of the committee.
Labeled version 2. Okay, thank you. Representative McPherson has moved adoption of the -1 amendments as a hand-engrossed version 2, which is in front of the committee. Are there any objections?
Yes.
Okay, so noted. Representative Burley. Okay. The amendment is adopted. Take another motion.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3203 as amended. With a due pass recommendation and
referral
to the Committee on Ways and Means for prior reference.
Thank you. There is a motion on the table to adopt, to move House Bill 3203-1 as amended with the hand-engrossed version 2 amendments to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
The only question, excuse me.
Yes, Representative Jensen and Representative Burley.
The only question I have is, why put the $1 Section 2 in? If Ways and Means doesn't want to pony up money on this, they have the ability to do that without our doing it here and taking the burden off them to make a decision between whether they want to fund it or whether they just want to put a dollar in for the sake of...
And Representative Jensen, my understanding is that, and as Willie Tiffany had testified, they are seeking federal funding. But in order to, they need to create that fund in order to have a place to put that federal funding in. And I tried to bargain it down to 50 cents, but I wasn't successful in doing that. So that was my understanding instead of the original bill, which had $5 million in lottery funds. This is $1 general funds, and it is going to Ways and Means to approve setting up the fund and not for additional general fund money, is my understanding. Willie, quickly, please. We have people waiting to go back to their committees.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Willie Tiffany with the League of Oregon Cities. Representative Jensen, that was standard boilerplate language. The director of the department assures me that it's pretty common practice that a dollar of general fund is needed to establish a fund, and that was the only purpose for that section.
Thank you. Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Regrettably, I'm going to be voting no on this bill, and I say that mainly because I am extremely uncomfortable voting on something that I don't know what it is, this handwritten, engrossed versions of engrossed, amended, handwritten amendments. Furthermore, Madam Chair, we had the hearing on this thing early in April. I'm not sure exactly what the problems were or who wasn't at the table or why it took so long to get back to us, but, you know, I'm looking at the sponsors of this thing, the representatives that sponsored this bill, and none of them have come forward to say they're okay with what's in this -3 amended handwritten thing. And they're not here to tell me today how they're going to, whether they support the bill that they sponsored with these amendments. So,
Willie, have you checked with the sponsors of this bill?
Are you referring to the
original legislation?
We had checked with the sponsors of the original legislation prior to drafting the -1 amendments and going through the concepts. They were all comfortable. As the amendments came out late today, trying to work with the opposition of the bill, unfortunately, I apologize. Representative Burley, I agree with you. It's the nature of a deadline today that we needed to get something moved through and just did not have the opportunity before this hearing. Literally, these hand-engrossed versions came about 5:05 this afternoon. So,
well,
I regret that we did not have a chance. But yes, Madam Chair, the sponsors of the bill were aware of the conceptually where we're going with the -1.
Okay.
One last comment. I'd like to leave on this, Madam Chair, because if we're going to be looking at this in ways and means, maybe it'll give us another bite at the apple to make some amendments. But given the last handwritten thing here where we are now going to say that the Water Resources Commission shall adopt the rules, my question is, since the Economic and Community Development Department, according to this, is going to administer this, how do they feel about being subject to the Water Commission's rulemaking process?
Madam Chair, I might suggest if this input is going to affect committee votes, then it may be useful input. But if it's not, it's just stringing out something that is moving to the next portal.
Madam Chair, committee for the record, Willie Tiffin at the League of Oregon Cities. Yes, we have worked with the department, Economic Community Development Department. That section was important for them. I've made a commitment to them that we will go back and we will not move this bill forward until they are comfortable. So we will do our due diligence with the department. If we need to make a change, we will do that before this bill moves on to any further steps.
And since it's coming to our committee, Ways and Means, we will have definitely more bites of the apple to discuss that. So I appreciate it. With that, the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Smith
is excused.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
He still has his hand up for discussion, but no.
Representative Burley?
No.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Aye. With that, the motion carries. House Bill 3203 is amended. We'll move to the Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Thank you very much, committee members. I apologize for the confusion. With that, I will now adjourn the House Energy and Environment Committee.
Madam Chair.
See you on Wednesday.